Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're taking a listen back to some of the best conversations of 2022. And that brings me to Dave Brubeck. He's a famous American jazz pianist and composer. But did you also know he is much more than a jazz icon? He's also composed classical music, choral works, and a ballet. He even wrote a Broadway-style musical in collaboration with his wife, Lola. That musical, The Real Ambassador, starring Louis Armstrong, is the subject of a book released this year by retired University of the Pacific professor Keith Hatschek. It tells the social justice backstory of the Brubeck's magnum opus, which premiered at the Monterey Jazz Festival 60 years ago. Cap Radio jazz host Avery Jeffrey shared their conversation back in September.
The title The Real Ambassadors is an ironic reference to the U.S. State Department program that sent jazz musicians around the world as cultural ambassadors. With music by Dave and words by Iola Brubeck, the musical exposes the hypocrisy of the U.S. government, which was using jazz musicians to promote democracy and freedom abroad while maintaining policies of racial inequality at home.
Who's the real ambassador? Certain facts we can't ignore. In my humble way, I'm the USA. Though I represent the government don't represent some policies I'm for. Oh, we learn to be concerned about the constitutionality in our nation. Segregation isn't a legality. Soon our only differences will be in personality. That's what I stand for. Who's the real ambassador? Yes. The real ambassador.
In his humble way, he's the USA.
This studio recording of The Real Ambassadors featuring Louis Armstrong was made just before the musical premiered at the 1962 Monterey Jazz Festival. We're lucky to have it because The Real Ambassadors was only performed once with its original cast, and the performance wasn't captured on tape. By all accounts, that September night in Monterey was magical and meaningful.
When Armstrong came on stage that night, he was dressed up as an ambassador with a top hat and a tuxedo, and he walked to center stage and beamed at the audience. There was a standing ovation after a huge roar came out from the crowd to see Armstrong on stage playing a role, a dramatic role, that directly matched his own strong feelings about Jim Crow and how segregation was a blight on America.
Keith Hatschek has authored several books on the music industry and was the director of the Music Management Program at the University of the Pacific for 20 years. Until recently, UOP housed the Brubeck Collection, a massive archive detailing the careers of Pacific alums Dave and Iola Brubeck. When Hatschek discovered materials related to the Real Ambassadors in the archives, he was surprised.
I knew most of Dave Brubeck's albums, and I thought, he never did a Broadway musical. What was this? So as I dug deeper and deeper in the Brubeck collection, I found three or four big file folders just full of correspondence and clippings. And then in another part of the collection, sheet music scores, song sketches, lyric sheets. And I realized this was a huge project between 1957 and 1962 that Dave and his wife, Iola Brubeck, really invested a lot of time and a lot of heart into.
Hatschek says the reason The Real Ambassadors was so important to the Brubecks was because it wasn't just a musical, it was a statement. They wanted to expose the racist ways that were ingrained in America and sanctioned by the government.
Dave and Iola decided to use their voice at that time, as Dave's star was really ascending, to call out segregation and to argue that it was pretty absurd to determine on someone's skin color how smart or successful or talented they might be. But that was the way America worked. And Dave led an integrated band, and there were hundreds of nights they played when they had trouble getting a hotel room after their gig because Eugene Wright, their wonderful bassist, was African American.
One experience that put the issues of segregation and government hypocrisy into stark relief for Brubeck was his involvement in a cultural exchange program hosted by the U.S. State Department. Louis Armstrong also took part in the program, which is what gave Dave and Iola the idea for creating the Real Ambassadors in the late 1950s.
American jazz musicians were touring all over the world on behalf of Uncle Sam, and winning the hearts and minds, you might say, of people from India to Pakistan. Well, when these musicians got home, many of whom were African Americans, the minute they got off the airplane, it was back to, here's your water fountain, here's your hotel room, and you could only get food through the back of the restaurant. So that irony was not lost on Dave and Isla Brubeck. And when Dave pitched the concept for the musical to Lewis, he flipped. He said, this is just what I wanted to say artistically. These are the thoughts I've had that segregation is ridiculous. And I'd love to play the lead role in your musical, Dave.
The State Department has discovered jazz. It reaches folks like nothing ever has. Like when they feel that jazzy rhythm, they know we're really with them. That's what we call cultural exchange.
Despite Armstrong's enthusiasm, the Brubeck's Dream Project faced some major challenges, not the least of which was the popularity of its star performers.
Brubeck was on top of the world, leading the top small jazz combo, touring America, Europe, all over, and he was booked months in advance. Armstrong, of course, was booked for movies, television, film appearances, tours up to 2 years in advance. So the economics of actually staging the musical as a musical with costumes and dancers and a chorus didn't really make any sense. Their careers would have all had to been put on hold.
When Broadway didn't work out, they tried for London and Washington, D.C., but to no avail. Ultimately, the real ambassadors, starring Louis Armstrong, Dave Brubeck, Carmen McRae, and Lambert Hendrickson-Bavon, found a home in Dave's native California as a one-off at the Monterey Jazz Festival in 1962.
The co-founders of that festival, Jimmy Lyons, a jazz DJ, and Ralph J. Gleason, who was a jazz journalist, wanted to premiere new jazz music that had been created just for the Monterey Jazz Festival every year. So premiering a musical, even in a concert version, fit right in with what their raison d'etre was for the festival. And Jimmy Lyons had to finesse the booking agents to get all of the talent, because we're not only talking about Louis Armstrong, we're talking about Carmen McRae, Lambert Hendrickson-Bavon, Dave Brubeck's band, minus Paul Desmond, who didn't want to participate, and Lewis's six-piece band. So Jimmy had the wherewithal to get all those artists booked for their own sets, and then he added a sentence in the end of each booking agreement, plus play 1 hour on Sunday night between 9 and midnight. And he did not specify what that 1 hour would be. Well, it was, in fact, the real ambassadors. And when it premiered that night, Avery, that crowd couldn't really believe what they were hearing and seeing. Here was Louis Armstrong and his band playing with Dave Brubeck, who on paper, they played completely different styles of jazz music. And Brubeck with lyrics and music, what? But the audience fell right in from the first beat of the first song, Everybody's Coming. And when Armstrong came on stage that night, Dave recalled, it sounded like an explosion.
Everybody's coming.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody's coming.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody's coming here. Louis Armstrong will appear. Promise, promise, she will sing. Brubeck's combo's gonna swing. Everybody's coming.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody's coming.
Yeah, yeah.
Louis is a-coming, coming is a-coming. Brubeck is a-coming, Lambert is a-coming. Hendrick's a-coming, the cross is a-coming, the drum is a-coming.
Like most any musical, The Real Ambassadors features a mix of up-tempo numbers and love songs as it delivers its rebuke of segregation. While the message alone proved to be apropos to the moment when the civil rights struggle in America was nearing its apex, the music and Armstrong's poignant performance stirred emotions in the audience and praise from the critics.
God created man in his image and likeness.
They say I look like God.
In the image of God created
him. Could God be black, my God?
In the image of God created
him. If I'm a man and the image of thee.
Male and female created.
Could thou perchance a zebra be?
In the image and likeness of God.
Can it be?
The Monterey premiere was truly a night to remember, but the musical might well have been forgotten if Columbia hadn't reissued the studio recording of The Real Ambassadors on CD. Hatschek says it brought Brubeck and Armstrong's message to a whole new audience.
This became sort of a footnote in both of their careers until, as you said, in 1994, Columbia reissued the CD, and a lot of younger musicians picked up on it and went, "What's this? Hey, this is pretty cool."
Three of those younger musicians, vocalist Liz Wright, trumpeter Roy Hargrove, and bassist Christian McBride, joined Dave Brubeck on stage at the 2002 Monterey Jazz Festival to celebrate the 40th anniversary of The Real Ambassadors. Still, the show never made it to Broadway as the Brubecks had first dreamed.
In 2002, they did three or four songs from it at the Monterey Jazz Festival. Got a very, very warm response. But again, it never really got out to the broader public, which I think was a disappointment to them because they saw Armstrong as the most eloquent spokesperson for equal rights. And my last in-person interview in 2009, they were both very clear that for them, The Real Ambassadors just fueled them to want to do even more and produce more new works and more different approaches musically to talk about social justice issues.
As we approach the 60th anniversary of the musical's premiere at Monterey, Keith Hatschek says it's important to remember that advocating for what's right is just as important today as it was in 1962. And doing so doesn't require star power.
Every one of us has agency. And although at the time Dave Brubeck and Louis Armstrong were world-renowned performers, they would have tackled a project like this even if they were just local heroes because it was in their DNA. They wanted to use their artistic voices to speak out. My challenge to people is that it doesn't have to be racial issues. It could be the environment. It could be healthcare. It could be how our society values elderly folks. Whatever your thing is, be a champion for that.
For Insight, I'm Avery Jeffrey.
Remember who you are. And what you represent, always be a credit to your government. No matter what you say or what you do, the eyes of the world are watching you. Remember who you are and what you represent. Represent, represent, represent. Jelly rolling bases helps us to invent.
And that is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast. If you want to join the conversation, email us at insight@capradio.org. Thank you to producers Nick Dobis and Victor Corral Martinez, with managing editor Aram Sarkissian. Our digital team is Chris Hagen, Emily Zentner, Helga Salinas, and Megan Minata. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones, and our engineers are Antonio Munez and Chris Feltz. Our show music is produced by Adrian Gilmore. And I'm Vicky Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.